We all know that climate change is a reality now. And what it has done is that it has led to extreme weather events. This in turn has led to more and more floods all around the globe. And the Indian rivers too have become more aggressive. But putting the entire blame on climate change is not correct. The overemphasis on climate change actually tries to downsize the anthropogenic changes, that is the human-induced changes. So historically, we have seen that there has been a policy shift from living with the flood to controlling the flood. So in this talk, you would understand the unique character of the rivers in the Ganga Basin in India, and that is how the Ganga and its tributaries behave. We are taking Mid-Ganga section as a case to understand how floods are perceived in rural landscape. You would also learn to engage with questions on changing policy shift from living with flood to controlling flood. And you will also know about the structural methods used by humans to deal with flood. So putting it in historical perspective, I will tell you about the difference between the environment friendly and the hard structure methods. Now these learning outcomes would make you understand what role can the government play in shaping the modern environment. The Ganga and its tributaries were intricately connected with the life of the people in Mid-Ganga Basin. Communities living in the Mid-Ganga Plain are enriched by many myths and rituals which were associated with the Ganga, and many such tributaries like the Ganga, the Gandak, the Kosi, these are all tributaries of the Ganga. And historically, it has been an agriculturally rich region. You can look at this map. India is actually fed by rivers all around. And the second adjacent map is of Mid-Ganga Basin. Here, the Ganga flows right at the center of this region from west to east. In popular perception, the Ganga carries an image of goddess that emerged from the jata of Shiva. Shiva is considered to be a god. And this popular perception is since ancient times. You know, people have prayed the holy Ganga and they take ritualistic dip in it. Even today, men and women, they stand in the rivers, the river water, and they give oblation to the sun. So they perform a worship called the Chhat Puja. This is only a section of the vast Ganga Basin where both the rising and the setting sun is worshipped on the banks of the river. So I'm talking about the Mid-Ganga Basin. But this is not the entire story. As an environmental historian, the more important part of the story, I can say, it has remained unsaid. The Mid-Ganga Plain no longer can boast of its natural riverine ecology. It has seen major transformation over the last many years. Today, the Ganga is a terribly polluted river. The groundwater in the plain has become highly contaminated. The arsenic levels have reached alarming proportions. So it has made people vulnerable to many diseases. Now all these changes happen over the last few decades. And at the core of the problem remains the attempt by humans to control the rivers. Now, the Ganga Basin actually forms one of the world's most extensive alluvial plains. Many rivers traverse the Ganga Plain, and of them, the Ganga itself is the largest river. In fact, it flows eastward from northwest and it finally descends into the Bay of Bengal. So the total length traveled by the Ganga is roughly 2,500 kilometers. Now this river Ganga originates in the Himalayas, but when it reaches the mid-Ganga section, it flows from west to east and many rivers meet the natural channel. All these rivers, the Gomti, Ghaggar, then you have the Gandak, the Kosi, they all alight from the Himalayas and they also meet the Ganga from the north. There are few rivers such as the Betwa River, the Chambal, the Ken and the Son River. These rivers originate in the central Indian pattern and they feed the Ganga basin on the south. Due to the descent from the Himalayan mountains, the rivers draining the Ganga basin, especially the mid-Ganga basin, which has much flatter plains, a huge amount of fine sediment gets deposited in the Ganga plain during the flood. In the next slide, you can see on your screen the huge flood-prone area in the mid-Ganga section. Here the flow of the water is more spread out and it is due to the congregation of different rivers from both north and south. Now the sediment that gets deposited in the flood every year is actually very useful for agriculture as it carries many minerals. The sediments deposited during the flood often obstruct the flow of the rivers once the flood recedes, because these rivers often cut a new path in the hugely, you know, spread out river through the deposited sediments. So, you know, the frequent avulsion of the river is very common in the region. I'm telling you all about these dynamics of the character of the mid-Ganga basin, because in the 19th century, it so happened that everything changed, especially in the later half of the 19th century. The land revenue maximization became the dominant motive of the British East India Company in the region. And as a result, the age-old idea of, you know, not disturbing the natural flow, it all receded. The colonial dispensation looked for some kind of a permanence in its revenue policies. And for that, it sought permanence in the ecological setting as well. So to safeguard its revenue, the colonial government went on to pass an act called the Bengal Embankment Act, which was passed in 1882. The fact is that in the past, the region already had the history of protection from floods through traditional embankments, which were known as bunds. And they were erected in order to prevent the incursion of the rivers into cultivable land when the waters were raised to unusual heights. One of the very renowned engineers in the late 19th century, he studied the irrigated floodplains of the Ganga basin. His name was William Wilcock. And he suggested that the colonial engineers were possibly misled by the success of their flood control projects that has actually worked wonders in areas like the Punjab and the United Province. But, you know, if the geomorphology of the mid-Ganga basin was completely different. And therefore, when the British actually tried to apply the same policy here, they actually did a blunder. In mid-Ganga region, the local communities, they used to dig up breaches at various points all along the main riverbed. So you look at this slide, the cultivators in pre-colonial, part of East Mid-Ganga Basin, which is also part of the Eastern India, it evolved a tradition of flood utilization and dependence on it. In their old traditional embankment, the height was deliberately kept to such a height that could protect the habitation. And the flood water was allowed to enter the cultivable fields through the dug-up canals. It also carried with it the rich organic silty sediments. So the water from the inundation also carried fish, which actually fed on the large mosquitoes in the ponds. The British engineers actually mistakenly considered the silted up canals that were dug up traditionally, they considered it to be like, you know, their dead rivers. And so these engineers came up with this idea of stopping such breaches. In fact, they could not understand the significance of these conventional embankments, which had evolved over a long period from the experience of flooding. The new Embankment Act actually led to more stronger and heightened embankments. The British engineers were completely oblivious of the fact that the annual occurrence of the flood led to the deposition of this very fine silt in the field, which was agriculturally very beneficial. In fact, the traditional embankments were of different types and were built with certain purpose. A cut was actually made in these embankments every rainy season, and it was for the sake of regulating the inland drainage. They were repaired for use again, and once the rain ceased. These there were also smaller buns called the beady buns, which ran at the right angles from the outer to the inner buns. And they were intended in case of a breach in the outer bun, so that the water could be retained within the subdivision. So instead of allowing it to flow over the whole space, it actually caught those surplus water into this subdivision. So in nutshell, the inundation in these parts were not considered as a problem. And the cultivators knew that in the end it was beneficial. Broadly speaking, based on the understanding of the traditional pre-colonial agrarian practices, two major assumptions can be posited. One, that there was no obstruction to the overflowing river so that the river water inundated the cultivable field. And secondly, the drainage from the field was equally important. It was important because the flood water receded without obstruction and the heavier silt went back to the main river bed. So embanking the rivers in the mid-Ganga basin with permanent structure was never a suitable idea because of the huge amount of silt that the rivers carried. So contrary to this traditional practice, the colonial government, the British colonial government, they perceived the long existing system of low traditional embankment they wrongly, and instead of strengthening and improving, it actually mistook the shallow wide cuts as abandoned navigational channels. So the engineers actually contemplated this whole idea of filling up these earlier cuts, and they strengthened it with, long embankments all along the river. And this was to protect the cultivable field from the annual floods. But in the long run, it resulted in arsenic contamination of groundwater. And, in the long run, what has happened, that it has led to massive use of fertilizers in cultivation, because now the natural silt deposited and the deposition process, it had stopped completely.